Welcome to the Two Wealth Show, a show that shares how you can create real wealth for you and your family. I'm one of your hosts, Justin Bogard, and my co-host is Elizabeth Sickles, aka Super E. I am a real estate note investor, specializing in performing residential real estate debt. I find the deals, acquire them for my own portfolio, as well as educate investors while walking them through the process of owning a real estate note. My co-host Super E, a real estate investor, specializing in short-term rentals and the management of them. She connects investors with short-term tenants and manages everything in between. Our show is sponsored by BrightPath Notes and Elizabeth Mayora. You can find out more information by visiting our websites at brightpathnotes.com and elizabethmayora.com.
Hello, Justin Bogard, and hello to our audience. We are on episode number 24 of the Two Wealth Show. So welcome, everybody. And I'm Elizabeth with Elizabeth Mayora.
Awesome. Well, hey, Elizabeth. And hey, to our listening and viewing audience, I'm Justin Bogard with BrightPath Notes. And yes, this is episode 24. We've got a couple left until the end of the season. So we got season three just about ready to wrap up. Super E.
Woohoo. Time has flown.
It has. It's been fun. We've definitely have brought some excellent guests on for some interviews this season, and I look forward to having some more for season four.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So fall is definitely here in Indianapolis. We've had some cold, even some winter temperatures. So I hope that everybody's prepared their houses accordingly for those that are in the winter or in the northern part of the U.S. and, you know, around the world as well.
Yeah, speaking of that, I actually have a property that we have a note on that went delinquent. Then the borrower doesn't live in the property, so it's up in Michigan. So we're having to go through that winterization process with the property right now. We're trying to hit that before December comes around.
Are there companies, Justin, that specialize in that?
Yeah, we call them property preservation companies, and okay. they work with REOs and banks and stuff, and they just. Their job is to go out there and secure the property and winterize them and just to protect the investment for the bank.
Excellent. That's a huge job.
Yeah. I'm sure it's not fun. Luckily, the houses that we get into, they're not very large houses. So they're typically a one or two bath at the most, three bedrooms or four bedrooms at the most. So the footprint's okay. Pretty small. So the work I don't think is that difficult to do, but you got to do it. You know, there's a whole checklist of things you got to do once the property goes vacant and delinquent. Just you know, you don't want that thing. And you know how it is, Elizabeth, in the northern states, you know, Indianapolis and above, it's the winters can be kind of harsh. And if you aren't protecting the pipes and stuff, or if you have a slow leak and you don't know about it, before long, you have a giant pool in the basement.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. You know, we currently have three traditional rentals that we're looking for some great residents for. And so we have all the electricity, of course, turned on, but we still check them every week. And the one, even though the pipes are on the outside and we have the temperature at 60 degrees, but we still put on just a drip of running water in the kitchen sink just to make sure, because you never know what can happen.
Yeah, it's going to be less expensive for you to have that water bill raise up a few cents than it is to have that pipe burst and cause a lot more damage in the house and then be down for not receiving income.
Exactly. Revenue. And you know, we had that happen in January of 2018. We had a polar vortex go through for all of our listeners and viewers in the Indy area. And one of our properties in Broad Ripple, the hot and cold water in the shower, the pipes busted. And this was in the middle of the house. It wasn't on an outside wall or anything. So that did the tune of $150,000 of damage. And we were down 4 months for that rehab. So it happens.
Wow.
I have been through it.
That is incredible. just a light mention for those of you that are listening to our show via the podcast through the audio channels. We do stream this via video on our YouTube channels, Bright Path Notes YouTube channel, Elizabeth Maora's YouTube channel as well. Just want to point out that Elizabeth already has her festive colors on for the holidays. So you got your red and your black. It's hard for me to see on the screen what you got on, but I see you got like your gold necklace on. Reminds me of stuff that kind of goes around a tree. So it looks like you got your tree wrapping outfit on.
That's right. I'm almost done with my Christmas shopping, actually. So
good. I have done a couple of items. I got some nice items for the kids before, because I heard a rumor that perhaps Christmas Amazon deliveries after Thanksgiving might be a little difficult to get through to everyone. So I went ahead and got some ones early that I thought about it. So.
That's a very good idea.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of while we're on the topic of Christmas and the cold. So one of the things that we get clients that sometimes they'll call us and ask us if we'll do all kinds of different things that are out of our wheelhouse. And we had a client that called us from here in downtown Indy, and he and his wife go to Arizona for the winter, and they need somebody to check the property every week, do a walkthrough, check all the windows, make sure there are no leaks, and just do a forte of other items. And so we've taken them on a client, you know, so even though it's that's not what we normally do, this is going to be a vacant property that people live in, you know, but there's always kind of a way to, if you want it to work, to make that happen and have an extra revenue stream.
Absolutely. It's a great idea.
Absolutely. You know, and they have a security system. So we'll be the point person once they leave, you know, we'll be on call for them 24/7, not 365 because they'll be back in the spring, but, you know, so you just figure out what it's going to cost you and then what margin you need to make on it. And, you know, and quota, if you can swing it, you know, obviously we still have some labor shortages, but if we can make something work, we always try to say yes and figure it out.
Rent everything, right?
That's right.
Own everything, rent everything.
Mm-hmm.
You say in the banking business, own nothing, control everything.
That's right.
What's been going on with you? I know that we both have visited some conferences or attended some conferences recently. And why don't you tell us in our listening audience here what you went to?
Sure. So I was at the Vacation Rental Management Association International Conference in San Antonio. So we had a total of around 1,700 participants. I spoke at a session, and then I was a moderator, a roundtable leader, actually, at another session. And I would say the two biggest takeaways for me, actually, there's kind of three, is that number one, a lot of the other conferences, they're always pushing technology. And, you know, if you want to manage efficiently, you have to have all this technology. And we use a lot of technology. But it was kind of interesting because this conference, the tone was a little bit different. And the fact that, well, you can still be efficient and not have all of this software and all this technology, because it all costs money. So that was the first time that's ever kind of been said or even been accepted, because it's always, oh, what software do you use for this? What software do you use for that? And that was really interesting. And then also one of the big things, I just totally lost my train of thought. But there are two other big takeaways that I had from the conference that are gone right now, but they'll come back.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. And when you figure it out, just jump on in.
Okay.
When you were mentioning about how they weren't focused or driving the conference towards having new technology and more technology to control your business, but to, you know, how you can still manage your business, not having all the technology and having some of it like you do and still thrive. So that was pretty interesting. And it made me think in my head, a conference that I went to, a big conference called the Note Expo, and it's an annual conference. It's always in the first weekend of November, and it's typically in Dallas, Texas, and all the larger note players in the note space, and a lot of the smaller time investors like myself are going to this type of conference to get, you know, education, to get in contact with some vendors that we kind of all use, to have some face to face with them, learn about new vendors that are coming up, and then hearing a lot of stories. And so it's not sales pitch driven. It is an expo conference, and it's generally just for education and just to get the word out or to help people along in their note business if they choose to have a career in it, or if they just do it as a hobby or as to, you know, make money passively in their retirement account. Right. So it was pretty good. We hadn't been live in person for since 2019. So it's nice to see all the familiar faces and all the new faces that are in the note space as well. And so I didn't get the opportunity this time to speak or to be at a round table or to be on a panel this time. So I was able to sit back and kind of listen and soak and absorb all the information in front of me. But I did get a little jealous. I didn't get up on stage this year. So maybe I'll have to work a little bit harder to get noticed so I can get up on stage next year.
It's always, you know, it's great to give back, right? Being up on stage and, you know, teaching people what you learned. And I remember the other two big takeaways. So one of them was before at all of the previous, because I'm very involved with Verma, the previous conferences, the international ones, and even some of our bigger ones as well, Airbnb has always had a pretty large presence. This year, the Airbnb presence was very small and the Vrbo presence was much larger. As a matter of fact, I didn't even go to the Airbnb booth and it was much smaller than normal and they didn't have near the representation that they normally do, which is interesting because their stock, so week before last, their stock just went up 18% because their revenue has been phenomenal for the third quarter and just overall for the year. So they're making money, which is a great thing, you know, both their revenue and their profit. So, you know, it doesn't really matter how much revenue you make if you're not making any profit.
That's true.
So when you're in business, you really understand that because, you know, if you're making $1 million, but you're spending $1.5 million, then that's not the type of, well, that is not profit. So, you know, that's the opposite way.
Takeaway.
What's that?
As it's takeaway, not profit, right?
That's right. And then the other takeaway was Matt Landau. He's the giant in the short-term rental industry, very, very highly respected. And he gave the ending, so the wrap-up presentation. And one of the things that he said was, you know, a lot of these people, I mean, they're huge. They have anywhere from 500 to 2,000 properties that they're managing. You know, sometimes they're all over the world, not just in the US. So really, really big, big players. And I loved it because he said, hey, if you meet somebody that they're just managing two properties, you welcome them because at least they're here and at least they're trying to learn how to be better and do more. And, you know, sometimes people get wrapped up in their egos and, oh, well, you only have, you know, two properties, right? Or in our case, we're up to 30 properties. You know, so it was just cool that he said that from the stage.
That's awesome.
And actually, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, and from the stats that I've been told through Note Expo, which I'll explain in a few minutes, is that the smaller players make up the largest margin probably in your market. Would you agree with that statement? Like the people that have maybe the one to four properties of Airbnbs make up the largest portion, as opposed to the big giant players that maybe make up a small sliver, but they have thousands of properties.
Absolutely. Very true. Yeah.
So the same thing in the rental market. And I know you know the stat, Elizabeth, but for our listening and viewing audience here. So there's about 16.4 million rentals in the United States out there. And that are the single family rentals, right? That are owned by and like a mom and pop. And of those 16.4 million, there's like, let's just call it 14 million that are owned personally, as opposed to owned in an LLC. And then of those 14 million that are owned individually, 11 million of those 14 are self-managed and not managed professionally. And so when you see those trends, you realize, okay, let's call them amateurs. The amateur players are the biggest share of the market, and they're doing things not efficiently because maybe they just don't know what they don't know. But it's interesting to know. And then when it's put there in front of you, realize, okay, here's where you can solve a problem. You, Elizabeth, you have to know that those 11 million let's say rentals, and maybe, you know, it's a handful of rentals per person. So maybe it's not 11 million people. Maybe it's like, you know, 3 or 4 million. Those landlords are probably reaching a breaking point, right? They went through COVID. They probably had struggles because they're self-managed and they probably didn't know how to vet their tenants properly. They didn't have the proper education and knowledge to do so. They just did it because their buddy down the street has a rental and he made $1,000 a month. Mm-hmm. So herein lies a problem to where that tenant is probably an issue for them and they're probably at their wit's end. And so someone like ourselves can come in and we can offer them a solution and be like, you like receiving that monthly cash flow, but how would you like to lower that liability and that activity in that and keep the same cash flow? Well, you know, and, you know, investing and partnering and being the bank and getting into the Airbnb business or having someone like Elizabeth self-manage, manage the whole process for you. It just makes a lot of sense for those people. And so I guess what I'm saying, Elizabeth, is that there's a lot of people out there that don't want to go back to the traditional markets. They want to stay in real estate, but they get so burned out because they don't have any time. They need a place to land their money, to make money. And what better opportunities than kind of what you and I do, Elizabeth, to park their money to where they're backed by real estate, but they don't have to be active in real estate. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Not having to worry about that asset is a huge, huge relief. And, you know, and you don't need to be involved in that day to day, especially if it's not your forte. We actually just got two new traditional rentals from a gentleman that's been self-managing. And he said, we're too nice. And they just call us all the time. And I'm like, well, I've got no problem setting those boundaries. So,
yeah.
So absolutely, you're right. You know, and sometimes too, whenever if the resident knows that, you know, they are dealing right with directly with the owner is going to back off a lot on maybe some things when they would say no, where, you know, when you have that management company, you know, I'm sorry, but that's, you know, that's not something that we do. Let's look at the contract. I'll show you in the, you know, so it's just, it does make a difference.
Yeah. When you're in the business that we're in or any type of real estate business, you don't want to be the highest person, you know, the highest level person talking to the actual client or the customer, because that emotion comes into play and it's tough to say no. And it's tough, you know, when you hear a sad situation or a sad story or a situation that's just a little tough, you kind of have to have the lines of defense to be like, look, you know, this really stinks and this is what I can do for you, but I can't go beyond that, you know? And so I can see a lot of these self-managed short-term people and self-managed rental people having those struggles because it is everyone's human and everyone, you know, they understand and they empathize with someone's situation or sympathize with them. And it's tough to get beyond that. But when you have a layer in your business that separates you from that individual, you know, you can put stop gaps in there and be like, look, I went up the chain, corporate chain, and it's just not approved. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it has to be hardened and fast rule, like, you know, with kids, you know, you love them, you want the best for them, but you got to have that tough love too. And you got to know when to say no and when to tell them, nope, you got to go to your bedroom, you're in trouble. especially when you have young girls and you're a father, they can wrap you around your finger pretty quickly.
That's right. No, no one to say no.
Yep. No one to say no. There you go.
Exactly. So in the note business, Justin, are you seeing any type of slowdown right now? Do the holidays affect that and going into year end?
You know, it's funny you mentioned that because they kind of affect it and they kind of don't. So the end of third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter, there's typically a lot of activity. So the last month of third quarter and the first month of fourth quarter, it typically is a lot of activity going on. So the reasons why is because typically funds are dissolving and they're divesting themselves of the investment to liquidate the fund. So the waterfall can go out to the investors. And so that's a good time to pick up assets. So if you are cash heavy during those time periods, you can find a lot of good deals going into the end of fourth quarter, beginning of first quarter of the next year. So that's where we're at right now, is where there's been a lot of activity, pushing and pulling going on in the note business. What we also see now from the bigger hedge funds that got a chance to speak on stage is that there are a lot of non-performing assets that were non-performing before COVID even happened. So Elizabeth, imagine if somebody on stage mentioned they bought a $30 million portfolio of delinquent loans, and they said the average last due date, so the last time they actually made a payment, was 2015.
Oh my gosh.
The average date was 2015 and the last payment date. So you got some that are, you know, closer to 2019, 2020. And you got some that are beyond 2015. You ask, how the heck can you be a lender and let somebody get that delinquent? Well, here's why. These bigger banks and these bigger firms, they don't have the capacity to treat each loan individually, to empathize with their situation, to go down a path that's best for the borrower. They go down the path of least resistance because they're working in volume. They have thousands of loans. So this is why it's good for people like us to get into those non-performing loans, is because we can work with the borrower, we can remodify loans, we can spend some time with them and help figure out a solution, number one, to help them out, and number two, to be profitable for us as an investment as well. So with that set of volume, that's just a small sliver of what's going on. So there is volume that was delinquent before COVID even happened. So if you can imagine, there's a couple million, let's just say a couple million loans that are sitting there in this ether before COVID even happens, and then COVID happens. So if they started a process, guess what? They were forbeared. They went through forbearance. They were, their loan information was moved to a later date. So they got another 18 months to be delinquent. So now those loans are 5-6 years delinquent and they haven't been paying. So now guess what? The price of real estate has gone up pretty much everywhere. So their home has appreciated. So more than likely, Elizabeth, they're not underwater with their mortgage. Very interesting times versus 2007, 2008, 2009, when the real estate market dropped and they were quickly underwater with their mortgage. So now we're looking at non-performing loans, Elizabeth, and we're saying, okay, there's an unpaid balance of $50,000 here. They have accrued interest arrearages for the past couple of years. So that number goes from 50 to, let's say, 56 to 60,000. Plus any corporate advances from the loan servicer, meaning they're paying taxes or insurance for them, because they're not making a payment, or any sort of attorney incidentals or anything like that. So that number now is, the payoff balance is now $60,000, even though the unpaid balance is $50,000.
Okay.
But the real estate was worth $50,000, you know, in 2015. Now it's worth $100,000. So now they have this fabricated equity. So they're able to remodify this loan pretty quickly if they need to. They're able to defer payments to the back end and start paying. They're able just to sell the house and actually make money and move forward. So it's a very interesting time right now. So when those loans actually come and hit our level, which hopefully should be pretty soon, there should be more opportunity to go buy non-performing loans and help those people out. Now, it's not going to be anything like it was in 2010, 2012, where there was 250,000 foreclosures going on at the same time every month. It's nowhere near that. It, you know, we're going to be, you know, a couple thousand at a time, you know, each month here and there. So that's the main difference of what's going on. So that's what we hear is coming down the pipeline. So the COVID loans, Elizabeth, there's about 8.8 million loans that were in forbearance. Of those 8.8 million loans, 75 to almost 80% of them are getting out of forbearance because they're repaying, they're reperforming, or they sold their property, or they refinanced their property and got out of it. So a very small select set of those are actually going to be delinquent to where they're going to be a problem. So let's just call it a couple million loans at the end of 2021 are probably going to be delinquent and going to be starting to go through either an active foreclosure or a loss mitigation to get reperforming.
Wow. That's incredible.
Yeah.
So, and much better news for the economy.
Yeah. So we're not going to have people not paying because loan servicers, the bigger loan servicers got hit very hard because they had to front the money for these larger banks, because that's their agreement with them, is that they will advance the money if the borrower's not paying, because the lender is paying a special insurance for it. Mm-hmm. So just imagine these loan servicing companies having billions and billions of dollars of debt just piling up that they're just, they're handing out to pay the lender. And so that it, we're going to see if any of these bigger servicing companies either need to ask for some government assistance, or they may end up flopping over and closing doors.
Wow. Very cool stuff.
It's just very interesting. So I'm optimistic about it. I'm not going to run around and say I'm going to buy just non-performing loans. If I see opportunities in front of me, I will take advantage of them. If not, you know, I'll probably stay down the same path I'm down, as which is, you know, the performing loans and buying mom and pop seller finance notes, which is what we kind of really good at.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Love real estate. There's always a way, right?
Yeah. This is a new cycle that no one's ever seen before, because real estate values are so high. That's just, no one ever saw this before. You know, it's been a seller's market for so long. It's starting to look like it's going to balance at some point. Maybe you're into the realtor part of the space a little bit more than I am. Was with maybe by next spring, it might start to balance out more with buyers and sellers.
Oh yeah. I totally agree on that.
Okay. Cool.
Totally agree.
Elizabeth, that was a good round of talking today. I think we're just about out of time. And do you have any last comments or anything you want to make for the end of the episode, number 24?
I would just echo what you had said. If you are buying Christmas presents this year, you might want to get them bought just to make sure you get them delivered on time or they're at the store.
That's right. So if you didn't know already, we mentioned this before, but please check out our YouTube channels, Elizabeth Mayor's YouTube channel, and then my YouTube channel is Bright Path Notes YouTube channel. And we record and stream this podcast on those platforms. So this was episode number 24. I'm Justin Bogart with Bright Path Notes.
And I'm Elizabeth with Elizabeth Mayora. Thanks, everybody.
Bye.
The Two Wealth Show is produced by Justin Bogart and Super E, sponsored by Bright Path Notes and Elizabeth Mayora. Thanks for listening and watching for our show.